Welcome back to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes from Oakland. Hoynesy, we made it. It's opening day, opening night, really. Here in Cleveland, we have to wait around until 10 o'clock tonight, but you're out there in Oakland. It's opening day. This is how many opening days is this for you?
I think this is 42, Joe. 42 oh, wow. Opening days. I can't remember any of them.
that's quite a few. This one obviously special for not only for you and for the Guardians, but particularly special for Stephen Vogt for a lot of different reasons. It's his first game as a manager of any kind, but also his family is there. This is the place where Stephen Vogt really sort of became Stephen Vogt as a player there in Oakland. And it's got to be kind of special for him to be opening his career, opening the season there at the Coliseum.
Yeah, it was nice to see yesterday during the workout. A bunch of players had their families there, including Stephen Vogt's wife and his kids. And they were, you know, they were all they hadn't seen their dad in about 2 weeks. So they were all hugging their dad. But he's really excited about coming back here, Joe, and opening his first season as a big league manager at the Oakland Coliseum. And it's kind of bittersweet, too, because this could be the last opening day ever at the Coliseum for the A's, because they are scheduled to move to Las Vegas in 2028. They're building a new ballpark there. I guess there's still some legal hurdles to clear, but you know, it's a very kind of unsettled time for the A's, as it has been for the last 20, 30 years. There's always been rumblings that they could leave, and it looks like that's taken a much harder turn toward reality.
Yeah, have they told you anything about taking precautions if things get ugly with the fans out there? I know there's to access the field, to access the clubhouse out there, you almost have to walk right past some of the fans. I always thought it was kind of unusual the amount of interaction that you just how close you are to the two fans when you're there at that particular park. Have they given you any heads up about? Make sure that you're staying safe while you're there?
No, nothing like that, Joe. I haven't seen anything. You know, I took the BART out to the workout yesterday, and I was looking for one gate was open, and I walked in and went up to the press room elevator. By the elevator. So there was there was nobody there yesterday. But it could be a little different today, I think. I didn't get any, no one really had any concrete ideas how many fans are going to be there. We've heard about some fan protest. It's going to be kind of let's get there and see what happens kind of situation.
Now, my big question is, you're sitting in that press box there. Last time I was there, there was a possum crawling around in the air ducts. So just make sure if you encounter the possum that you have all of your stuff protected, because you don't want to be coming home with a rabid Hoynesy would be not the best thing. Stephen Vogt, obviously not the only ex-Oakland player on the roster or in the clubhouse there this weekend. Ramon Laureano also had some words and had some thoughts about what's going on there in Oakland as he's coming back as a player.
Yeah, Ramon obviously was claimed on waivers by the Guardians last year after being released by the A's. But he's been an A. I think he's spent his entire big league career with the A's until last season. He was drafted by them, he was kind of he was talking about how great the Oakland fans are. He said that when they had a wild card game there, I believe in 2019, he said he went out there and it was as loud as he'd ever heard it. And the year before, the A's had played at Yankee Stadium. And he said the A's fans, there was no comparison between the Coliseum and Yankee Stadium. He said the ground was shaking almost. You couldn't hear each other. You know, you couldn't hear each other talk. He said, you know, then it dawned on him, and he said, you know, this is a great fan base. You know, if they really brought in players and ran it like a regular franchise, you know, that it'd be like this every day. But he said they didn't, and Now they're on the verge of moving. And he said, you know, everyone saw this coming. This is no surprise.
Yeah, it's crazy that he would think that it was louder in Oakland. That's a stadium without a roof on top of it. You know, it's all the upper deck is open air. There's no roof there to keep that that sound in, and they could still make it that loud.
Yeah, he said, you know, Mount Davis, the structure they built for Al Davis to get the Raiders back to Oakland. He said that was packed, and he said the ground was almost like an earthquake. He said I wasn't sure if he was saying the ground was moving or it was just so loud, but it was interesting.
What do you think of Laureano and just his position, his status with this team, and where he is in his career right now? You know, he's said during spring training that, you know, this is the healthiest he's felt in several years. And, you know, he could be, you know, that, you know, sort of what they need. They need a right-handed bat out there. They need somebody to be productive. Can Laureano be that guy?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's kind of a guy to keep your eye on. And you're right, Joe. He's had abdominal injuries for the last 3 years that haven't allowed him to really swing the bat like he can. He said he's healthy now. He's made some adjustments in his stance, and he swung the bat really well in spring training. So, you know, that would be, you know, if he could come around and, you know, hit, he's had a couple big years in his career. If he could duplicate that, that would be a great bat to hit behind Josh Naylor in the fifth spot.
And we know that defensively he's amongst one of the, you know, some of the best in baseball in the outfield. He's got a tremendous throwing arm. You know, the last time we had a guy in the outfield in Cleveland who had a tremendous throwing arm and sort of knew that he had a tremendous throwing arm, it didn't work out too well with Yasiel Puig. But Laureano, we've seen the highlights. We've seen him, you know, throw out base runners, and you know, maybe that's something that the Guardians will need to use this year as he's out there playing defense.
Yeah, Miles Straw was calling him the laser in spring training, because I guess he made some throw out in Oakland or something. He was talking about a throw he made last year that, you know, kind of opened everybody's eyes in the dugout.
Yeah, there have been several. If you go online and search just Ramon Laureano defensive highlights, there have been several over his career. So something to keep an eye on and look for. Maybe Laureano has a sneaky productive season for the Guardians. Another guy who will not sneak up on anybody, will not surprise anybody, will be the Guardians opening day starter in Shane Bieber. He is out there. He's ready to take the ball for the fifth consecutive year as Cleveland's opening day starter, a tremendous honor for him. And everything right now is set up for Bieber to have a tremendous season. Whether or not that season is entirely with the Guardians or split between the Guardians and another team after the trade deadline, that remains to be seen. But if Bieber can keep his head down and keep his thoughts together and get through it, he has a chance to do something special this year.
Yeah, he looks like, based on his performance in spring training, he looks like the old Shane Bieber, the guy we saw, you know, 2018, 2019, 2020. I think he's healthy, Joe. The work he did at Driveline in Scottsdale, Arizona during the winter really helped him. Stephen Vogt said more than the velocity, more than anything else, it cleaned up his mechanics. He was able to get back to the delivery that he had earlier, that, you know, maybe he had adjusted because of the injuries he'd suffered in the last two of the last 3 years. But whatever the reason, he's had a really good spring, and I know he's fired up about pitching tonight against the A's.
All right, the biggest question then, I think, about today is, can Bieber become the first pitcher since Bob Feller to throw a no hitter on opening day. Would that make? I mean, from everything you're telling me there, it sounds like Bieber is ready to go and just give him the Cy Young right now. But could he go out there and do that? Could he be if you're talking about doing it against obviously an Oakland lineup that's probably not going to be winning a lot of games in this season. They've struggled tremendously the last few years. Can Bieber take advantage of that and become the first pitcher to throw a no hitter on opening day since Feller?
I don't.
Come on, Hoynesy. I'm begging you. Come on,
Joe. I'm. Don't do that to me, man.
Stick your neck out once, Hoynesy. Come on.
I'm not ready to write an opening day no hitter. All right. I'm too old for that.
I won't hold you to it, but Hoynesy says Bieber's going to throw a no hitter. Okay. All right. Well, if Bieber does throw that no hitter tonight, we will be blowing up our subtext, even though it's late.
I'll be jumping out of the press box.
Yeah, that's we know. Subtext is our subscription texting service, the best way to get updates on the Guardians throughout the season from Hoynesy and from me. You can sign up for $3.99 a month. Go to cleveland.com/subtext or send a text message to 216-208-4346. Send the word subscribe there and we'll send you back a link to sign you up for that. Love to have you as our one of our subtext community subscribers throughout the season. Hoynesy, there's some formalities to get through before we get to the opener. The Guardians actually worked a couple of trades, a couple of minor deals here for some pitchers, some relief pitchers. What can you tell us about the two new arms acquired by the Guardians in these two players that they got, Zach Kent and Peter Strzelecki?
Yeah, Peter Strzelecki, pitched, made 37 appearances for the Brewers and Arizona last year. Was a non-drafted free agent by the Brewers in 2018. He made 36 of the appearances for Milwaukee and only one for Arizona after they traded for him at the deadline. And he was designated for assignment on March 25th. So that's how he became available for the Guardians to make that deal. Who's the other? Zach Kent.
Zach Kent.
Yeah, Zach Kent. They acquired him from Texas for $250,000 of bonus pool money. I think that was available because with the number one pick, they've got the biggest, draft mm-hmm. bonus pool in baseball. So they were able to spare that, I think. And they're both right-handed pitchers. They were optioned to Columbus and they fill out the 40-man roster. So, interesting move, but I guess, they had the openings because of all the injuries they suffered, in spring training, especially to that pitching staff. So they had the openings on the 40-man.
Yeah. Kent, a guy who had dealt with some oblique strains and delayed his season last year. And, that might have kept him back a little bit. But obviously the Guardians saw something they liked there. I remember Chris Antonetti saying after they won the number one draft pick and the extra bonus pool money that they get with that, he said getting the number one pick was huge, not just because you're going to get a tremendous player at the top of the draft, but that bonus pool money is also important because it allows you flexibility to do things like this, like going out. And if there's a player that you saw that you particularly like, that international bonus pool money is important to some franchises, especially the ones like Arizona, who are going to be, down the order and not have as much of it. So that's an important ability to be able to go out and acquire players with that bonus pool money. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're using it on draft picks at all or guys in the international phase of the draft. So, these are moves that, might not be, move the needle or show up big on, nationally right now, but eventually one of these guys might wind up taking a spot in the bullpen or at least coming up for a little bit of time if there's an injury or if there's performance issues or anything like that. The one thing that we think it does mean is that we're pretty sure now that Cade Smith is going to be on the roster because both of these guys are going to AAA.
Yeah, really a nice story about Cade Smith. They told him over the weekend that he was on the club, but with the caveat, if we sign someone else, you're going to Triple H. And Joe, that we found out yesterday. Cade Smith is born in Canada. He's becoming a an American citizen, and he has been unable to go to return home for the whole year since he's applied for citizenship. And his father, who lives in Canada, obviously was undergoing some heart problems, had to have surgery. And the whole family was reunited yesterday, and they saw and they came over to the Oakland Coliseum, and they were reunited there. I think Cade, his family, his wife. It was kind of cool. It was a good, a cool scene.
So when the team goes to Toronto, is by then are things going to be cleared up? Is he going to be able to travel back to Canada to be with the team if he's still with the club?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know when that becomes official, when he, officially becomes a dual citizen. So we'll have to see. But they've had, problems with that in the past. Not problems, but certain players or certain personnel have not been able to go to Canada, because of that.
Right, yeah, I remember there was an issue with the translator a couple of years back as well. So, yeah, all very fascinating. Boy, it seems like we're getting a strong Canadian influence on the roster now. We've got what is there? There's at least three of them, right? With the Naylor brothers and Cade Smith.
Yeah, and Cal Quantrill left, so they're going to drop the puck here instead of throwing out the first pitch.
Yeah, well, at least there's somebody for Josh Naylor to talk hockey with. That'll be important as well. All right, some housekeeping items and things to talk about. Just what the opening day roster is going to look like. We're going to see it in about 40 minutes or so. Right now, probably around 1 o'clock our time. But we have a pretty good idea. Guys like Trevor Stephan and James Karinchak will probably open on the 60-day injured list. That takes them off of the 40-man roster and gives gives Cleveland the opportunity to put guys like Kent and Strzelecki on. But the other guys that are going to remain on the injured list, going to open the season on the injured list, we've pretty much known about for the last couple of weeks here, right?
Yeah, Gavin Williams is with the club. He's been thrown out to 180 feet, Joe. He'll travel with the club to Seattle. He'll throw a bullpen there, and then he'll return to a Goodyear and continue to work off the mound and get ready for a rehab assignment. Sam Henkes is here. He's been, going through his throwing program. I think he'll travel with the team and for the home and get return to Cleveland for the home opener, and then either go back to Goodyear or go out on a rehab assignment. And Xavier Curry and Ben Lively, are still in that Goodyear throwing and kind of doing the last part of their spring training, and then they'll go out on rehab. But all of those guys, those four guys we mentioned, will open, I'm sure, on the 15-day injured list.
Right, and when Williams is ready to come back or go out on an assignment and then work his way back in, that fifth rotation spot, becomes in question because that's ostensibly that's his spot to reclaim, depending on how Carlos Carrasco does over the first couple of weeks. But what could be some possibilities that they would have? Could they move Carrasco into the bullpen when Williams comes back?
Yeah, I think that's the obvious move. And if Carrasco goes into the bullpen, somebody has to go. Tyler Beebe would be on the bubble, I would imagine. But all those things, like, we can speculate on. But they usually have a way of taking care of themselves. The season takes care of that. So that's still, a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks down the road. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's we're about to get into it. We're about to raise the curtain here and get this started. Are you excited? I mean, I can't wait to for the team to get back here, really, just to be around them once again, but to see real baseball that counts, and you know, balls and strikes that count, and outs, and you
You're
know,
fired up, Joe.
I can't wait. Well, you see, this is I've been going crazy this whole off season. I can't wait. I know this is 42 of these. I'm sure that you're taking this in stride, but yeah, it's this is big.
No, there's always something special about opening day. You know, you get excited about it. You want to see, nobody's won a game or lost a game, or except to the Dodgers and
The Dodgers and the
the
Padres,
San
yeah, they.
Diego. Yeah, but you know, there's it's starting anew, and you want to see if all the stuff you've been writing about comes true, all the players you've talked to and writing about in spring training, how they do, and just how this club is going to come together, Joe. It's an interesting club, but you know, there's some good points and some question marks, and they're going to get answered in 162 games. You always find out what kind of team you have, you're playing on, or you're watching.
Yeah, that's my biggest fear, is that everything I've been talking about this offseason, everything I've observed and I've predicted and sort of thought about this team, it's just going to happen the opposite, and I'm going to sit here just having to face the music with people on social media or whatever. Before we go, just really quickly, we published our season predictions, our record predictions for the club this year. Just real punchy. Just tell us why, what you think the Guardians are going to finish, and where they'll finish in the AL Central.
Yeah, I've got them finishing third in the AL Central, Joe. I think they've got a chance, I believe, to play 500, but I'm not I don't see them as a 500 ball club right now. I like certain parts of the club, but I'm wondering how it comes together as a whole, and my question, as always, is the offense. Are they going to score enough runs?
It was your prediction in terms of wins and losses was what? I believe it was 78.
Yeah, 78 wins. Yes. Two
78
more than
wins in a
last
third
year, right?
place. Right. And I had them at 75 wins and third place, struggling for third place in the division. I see it as we don't like this phrase, but sort of a bridge year. Sort of a development year for, continuing for guys like Jimenez, Kwan, and really Rocchio sort of stepping in now. And I think the Naylor brothers will continue to get better. And it sets them up to be in a good spot for next season. But I think they're going to have to get through a swamp of a year this year and just wade through it. I think there will be stretches where they play really well. And then there will be stretches where you turn around and you look and you just say, what are these guys doing? And maybe they have some things figured out by the end of the year, by September, and we get to see some of those younger faces and that we've been talking about all spring. But right now, I think this is going to be a tough year to get through, with some promise on the other side, a lot of hope maybe at the end of the year for this club heading into 2025. Hoynesy, that's going to wrap up today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast, opening day edition. Can't wait to get things started. Looking forward to your takes and your stories from Oakland all weekend. And we'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Good deal, Joe. Happy opening day or night.